Good morning.
Curtis?
Yes. Hey, Audra, how are you?
Good. This is both Kelly and Audra.
Okay. Well, good morning to both of you. Hi, Kelly.
Curtis, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you, too. Are you in the holiday spirit?
Always.
Especially. Always. Okay. Sounds good.
Well, look, I always like to start with whatever's on your mind, so why don't we start there and you bring me up to date in terms of, you know, what's been going on. And I've got a little bit of a refresher of the notes I took the last time we spoke. So, you know, why don't you go ahead and get started with what might be on your mind in terms of your business practice or anything else?
Well, as far as the focus, we narrowed that down some. I'm not sure we narrowed it down enough, but we basically narrowed our focus to family businesses and eventually working with nonprofits to help them manage their health. And then I got out an action plan for 2020 to Audra and
Good.
That were basically nine bullet points.
Okay. So are you going to send me a copy of it? You're going to share it with me? Or?
Yeah, I can send it to you. I've got it in a little Word file, and it's a one-pager. Yeah.
Good.
And on that, we set our basically our family business practice helps clients. I'll send you the action plan, but above that, we just said we wanted our focus to be on retirement planning. So that
right.
I feel like that's a real strength in the practice. Investment management, and then under that, I put corporate cash management, company-sponsored retirement plans, and then transfer of business ownership planning, which would be basically exit strategies for the owners, either to the next generation or third party.
So succession planning for business owners.
Yeah, I guess that's another way to put it.
I think it's a better way.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm writing that down just because I want to keep notes on the call, but then the nonprofit.
It's being recorded, so you can always go back to it.
Okay. So where we are on the action plan, the last bullet point was complete revamped marketing piece by December 25th. And Audra, I signed that out to Audra, and she's already gotten everything edited. She and I went over the edits.
Well, I turned it into the marketing department, but they said that they'll get something to us at the beginning of the year just because of it being the holidays. If that's
fine.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
You know, our goal was by Christmas, but you know, we're a little bit behind on that, but that's not a big deal.
Okay.
I don't think it's a big deal anyway. I think they'll send it back and we'll approve it and go on.
Yeah.
But as part of that, Audra made a really good suggestion that she felt like we needed to have one marketing piece that dealt strictly with the family business segment and a totally separate marketing piece on nonprofits. And I agree with that. We had it all jumbled together in one, and we had a bunch of content, quite frankly, that needed to go.
Yeah.
It really was a testimonial to how buried in minutia I can get and how it could feel. I think, you know, what's coming next as far as the piece itself is going to be something I can plop down in front of a CPA or COI and really say, you know, this is what we do, the differentiator, you know, and this is something that we can really add value to your clients who fit this particular demo. But anyway, and then there's you know, an action plan, I'll let you read it whenever we send it, but there's AUM goals with, you know, time frames, revenue goals, client relationships and limiting those to a certain number, and we got all that specified. Reassignment of relationships below certain revenue threshold. Stuff that's kind of the operational side of Supernova. And then and then the goal on, based on what we were talking about the last call, of me spending at least 50% of my time on new client acquisition. And so I'm time blocking the calendar for that sort of thing, even in the holidays right now when some people say, well, why are you doing that right now? But I'm obviously being mindful of the clients and prospects. But we're time blocking that so that, you know, that becomes the biggest priority. And then expansion of the COI network, and there's some details on that, and then developing one outside business owner advisory team with the social media expert, HR expert, attorney, CPA, or ERISA attorney, and M&A specialist. Anyway, I didn't want to get too deep in the weeds on that, but that's what we've done since the last call.
Okay.
And we're just busy. We're busy.
Absolutely. You're trying to finish up a year, and then you want to get another one cranked up. It's really a tough time of year because there's no off season in the business, and so you know, you've got to, you know, figure out when you can also just, you know, get your personal time that you need to kind of just refresh and reflect and do those things. So, you know, I think almost everything that you have identified, we talked about. I'm just looking at my notes from the last call, and you know, we broke things down into, at least I had it down to, four categories. One was administrative, operational kinds of things for your plan. Two, strategic initiatives, those three or four things you want to focus on. And then three, new business development. And the fourth was marketing the practice. So it seems as if, you know, you are tackling all those, all the right issues so that you can, you know, launch 2020 being really, really focused, knowing exactly what you want to do, and being organized. So that's really, really good. What about...
from the last call, I mean, I, that wasn't because we just did it. I mean, it really was... We just really listened intently to the last call and the calls preceding it, leading up to that, and said, these are things we need to do and change.
Yeah, it's... you're crystallizing... you're really crystallizing your efforts. You know, this stuff, you know, you'll constantly be doing that as you continue to grow and develop, you know, the team. You're going to always be reevaluating, you know, your methodologies and your focus and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's really refreshing. It's good to see. So here's a question for you.
We have an impeachment in the midst of all that, right?
Oh, my goodness.
You got to
throw that one in there, huh?
I got clients that are rabid Trumpsters, which neither one of us are, not even a little bit. We didn't vote for him. We'll never vote for him.
Really?
People who are
rabid progressive.
Ultra conservative.
Well, there's that, and then there's also a group of clients that are very active to the point of, like, they would never, ever, even for a moment, think about ever voting for Republican. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but you know, and then we have the ones that are kind of where I am, where I'm just a conservative, socially liberal kind of guy. They're kind of they have no place to go. Like,
well, Bloomberg.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Michael would get my vote. But anyway.
Well, you know, I kind of live in the ultimate liberal, almost sometimes to the extreme out here in, you know, California. You know, you just don't know which way the wind is blowing.
Right.
But it's funny to watch people crop circles in Texas, and Bexar County and San Antonio is different from the rest of the state. I mean, we are one of the few blue counties that's a metropolitan area. You get south of here into the Rio Grande Valley, and it's all blue. Like,
yeah, wow.
But they, it's a different world, and I do a lot of business down here because I speak Spanish, you know. And in fact, I was down there earlier this week on a plan conversion. But it's not, you know, people think of Texas as being monolithic. I can tell you nothing is further from the truth. We are more like the people in San Diego and San Antonio than we are like the people in Dallas or even Houston, even though.
Right. How about Austin? How's Austin with the, you know, kind of a college town, kind of a tech environment?
Well, it depends on the zip code in Austin. So you've got some parts of Austin that are rabid Trumpsters and other parts that are incredibly progressive. And it is so funny that they all kind of live there, but it definitely...
Yeah, I don't know how they don't kill each other.
Yeah.
They used to call it the hippies and the rednecks, and then all the Californians and New Yorkers moved in. So it's the hippies and the rednecks and the New Yorkers and the Californians, you know. It's an amalgamation the thing I find stressful about Austin, I mean, I like it as a city. I really do. I'd give it high marks. Audra doesn't, but they really have this incredible need to be like hip, and there's a bunch of hipsters there. And San Antonio is not that at all. In fact, San Antonio is more of a
live and let live.
It's a live and let live kind of place. It was the first city in the South to integrate. Catholic Church has always been a very powerful influence here, and still, even amidst the crisis in the church and all, it's...
I found it to be an incredibly friendly place the one time I was there.
It's very a festive place. Like, we have parties all year long for whatever excuse we can find. We get out of the holidays, and we have one of the largest indoor rodeos in the world, and there's a big party around that for several weeks.
Well, what I love,
and we get out of that, and we go into Fiesta, which is about the size of Mardi Gras now, which is a three-week celebration. And then we get out of that, and we're into the summer break, and then you get out of the summer break, and then, you start hitting Halloween. We got to have a party for that, and then Thanksgiving and Christmas. And in between, they have, like, just a very active party. It is a big party town.
Well, what I love about San Antonio is more so than...
There's a party every weekend if you wanted to.
San Antonio is a town where there's a lot of diversity in culture. But
there's
not
a
only
lot of
is
diversity.
There diversity in culture, that there is a respect of other people's cultures. And a blending. You know, it is not uncommon. I've got a lot of friends that are just as old moneyed white guy San Antonio that will go over to West Avenue to the little Three Pitas taco stand in their Escalade because they love the tacos there. You know?
And
I love it.
And Three Pitas are trite tacos, okay? So, I mean, that is not Tex-Mex. That is hardcore Mex-Mex. And, you know, and that's the type of place that San Antonio is, which is everybody.
Military town USA.
Yeah, military town USA. That everybody's got a real respect. There's a real respect for every other culture here that I don't necessarily see in other cities.
I don't see it in other cities. I see it in Chicago. I saw it in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of ethnic diversity in Chicago.
Right.
With clubs of different, you know, the Polish section, the Chinatown, and on and on and on. Not as much in New York.
You know, San Francisco's only 49 square miles. So it's... Yeah, and, you know, you can eat just about any kind of food you ever want to think about in that city.
Anything goes here, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, like, drag queen festivals. I mean, they don't care. They're just like, as long as they're not hurting anybody and you're not we'll take you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's no any racial strife at all, like between the Hispanics and the gringos like me or the African American community. Everybody gets along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of bickering back and forth that you see. And I think we're the seventh or eighth largest city in the U.S. now. Most people don't know that. You know, they go,
wow, I had no idea it was that large. It has a small town feel.
Yes.
Totally.
It does have a small town feel. So that's good.
You want 20 minutes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so let's talk about our practice. Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. So you're in a great town, great market, diverse, lots of business opportunities to take advantage of. So the last bullet point that you talked about was this business owner and kind of surrounding yourself with an advisory team to kind of plug and play when a business owner needs it. So is that, obviously, that's going to be one of your initiatives. Have you given some thought in terms of the makeup, the kinds of roles you want slotted to deliver to business owners? Obviously, you've got the retirement plan expertise. Have you thought about somebody with CFO kind of capabilities and, you know, some internal marketing or external marketing web and social media capabilities to be on that team? What have you been thinking there?
Yeah, we've got one client who's already a social media expert, and the only challenge there is she's looking to exit the business. But I think my sense is she's got 40 employees. They're moving it to the next generation of employees that actually aren't family members. And and she's moved to Denver, and she's basically kind of bouncing between Denver and San Antonio for the immediate future. But I also don't think she's somebody who's ever going to just completely shut down. She's kind of a serial entrepreneur, honestly, and she's in the business with her husband, and he kind of checked out before she checked out. But I'm going to approach her and just see and take her temperature, because she truly is a social media expert. She owns a company called Texas Creative. You can look them up at texascreative.com if you're interested.
Okay.
That would be really great.
She'd be bored out of her mind not doing anything. But what she doesn't want to do is she doesn't want to have the ad agency that she has, where there are, you know, it's a constant stream of deliverables and a constant stream of having to find new billable hours. So,
you've seen this before, where certain people, depending, you know, on age, they just kind of reach a point where they're like, I don't want to chase the nut anymore. And I think that's what happened to her.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you kind of, that sounds great. She sounds like quite a talent. And you know, all of a sudden you start building this external, you know, advisory team. And, you know, they can deliver clients back to you. So this is, that's really good. You need a CFO type in there.
I'm starting with the CFO type. The HR expert, I'm going to approach Legacy about that.
Okay.
They have their HR consulting within the PEO. On the attorney front, we're thinking more of like an M&A attorney. I've got someone that's a partner at a local firm who's agreed to review our marketing material for us.
Okay.
Mason.
Okay.
And she's with a national firm. On the CPA front, I've got some people there, but we need to talk about that in more detail. I've got an ERISA attorney in Austin who's really good, who runs the outside counsel for the fourth largest pension in the country, Texas TRS, Texas Retirement Service. And we've got a good relationship with him. He could be the ERISA attorney. We have an M&A specialist in investment banking in Dallas we have a long-term relationship with. So where the big gap is right now is on this sort of CFO person.
Yeah.
And I know where you're going with that. I've seen those kind of businesses out there, but I haven't really developed a relationship there.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that's pretty good, though. I mean, you know, you'll get that one going, and look, you're going to be able to deliver kind of, you know, I think a great external team in support of your business owner, family business efforts. So, you know, that's great. It looks like 2020 is going to shape up to be, you know, a pretty good, you know, year for you. Okay, so we were talking a little bit about this this value proposition a little bit, and you know, I haven't, you know, we want to change it from the corporate wellness solutions to what you provide to the family-owned businesses, and some of these businesses, you know, are probably LLCs, they're small corps, that sort of thing. So you have to, when you're formulating the value proposition, you've got to think about what do they say is the value that you bring, okay? And then we need to translate that into a articulated statement. So I would say that's kind of the thing to just work on what that statement might look like based on the value that you bring to the table. What do they say? You know, not just, you know, I don't want it to be something that speaks to, well, we do retirement plans. No, I want it to be something just a little deeper than that. You know, what's the feeling that they get when they work with you? You know, how do they feel based on what you deliver in addition to the technical advice? So, you know, probably you're providing advice and guidance. You know, those might be a couple of the buzzwords that are get used in your value proposition. I wouldn't use the term holistic because that's kind of overused a little bit, and it doesn't necessarily, it's not received, what's the best way to use it?
It has a different connotation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
so I would. Yeah. But that's what you are delivering. You and I can talk about holistic capabilities and service, but how do we translate that into the value statement that that clients can really understand? Okay. So I'd like you to think about that. I'm going to give some thought, you know, to that as well, but you should just jot down first the buzzwords, and then we can look at formulating the statement. Okay? So advice, guidance, you know, I had somebody tell me, what's your objective? What do you want? I want people to be happy. I want them to sleep at night. And they translated some of that into a value proposition. So I'd like to you to think about what you want, but think about what does the client really, what do these people really want?
What are the psychographics that we would tap into in our value proposition?
Yes, exactly. Something that's going to resonate from that family business owner. Mm-hmm. Emotional connection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, these things
kind of like,
are tough sometimes.
But once you tap into it, you tap into it. I was going to say, I mean, as much as I hate Trump, and honestly, I really do, Make America Great Again.
Oh.
Simple, great.
Brilliant.
Simple
from a marketing
one.
Point of view.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It truly was.
It didn't need to be made great. It was already great.
He tapped into a psychographic that was there and that was real and that felt unrepresented. And that is why people are willing to overlook. Literally, I think he could kill somebody on camera, and his base would do nothing about it.
Yeah, they're disenfranchised, where they feel like he gets them. You know,
it was kind of an unselfish message that that people can rally behind. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if you looked at Eisenhower, win with Ike, you know, that was kind of a selfish message, you know. And, you know, I'm not so sure we can remember any of the other, you know, kind of messages and a lot of these other campaigns, but that one definitely resonated with a lot of people. And so your message has to resonate as well. It's gotta drive and have that emotional connection, you know, with people. So what are you thinking, Audrey? You got a couple bullets on that?
No, I mean, I know it all starts with identifying who the demographics of your target. And so we've got that very clearly identified. It is the, I would say, 65 to 70-year-old, excuse me, not 65, but 55 to 70-year-old business owner. Typically, they work within a family. Typically, they support Trump. That for whatever reason, they love to collect cars, which is weird. They're your typical entrepreneur. What we really need to do is we need to delve into the psychographics. And honestly, I think what would be helpful is reading something about the entrepreneur. There has to be studies that have been done.
Are they the millionaire next door? Have you read that book?
Yeah.
They are the millionaire next door.
So that would be interesting.
And it's increasingly not just male.
Totally.
Women. Yeah.
So, but there's definitely that person who's going to start a business.
Okay.
It's different than other people.
They're wired a little differently.
And so we just really need to sit down and do this well, but not paralysis by analysis, which I can't.
Right, yeah, it doesn't have to be a paralyzing kind of a thing.
Right.
I want to give some thought to it as well.
I'm going to download I can't remember his first name. His last name, Stanley, wrote The Millionaire Next Door. I read that book, but he has subsequent books that I'm going to download on audio and listen to over the holidays. One of them is Marketing to the Affluent, and the other
Marketing
one is
Marketing to the Affluent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the other one is like
Selling to the Affluent.
Selling to the Affluent. They're Selling to the Affluent, Marketing to the Affluent.
I've read two or three of his books.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah.
Did you like
brilliant. I mean, he kind of tells you kind of what you kind of know, but legitimizes it.
Yeah.
And puts it in a language that you can really relate to. And, you know, mostly, you know, the takeaways were the values of these folks.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, these folks didn't trade up on houses. They stayed in the same neighborhoods. And they got a lot of money. So.
Well, and that's what I would say. I mean, what I've noticed with our client base, almost every single one of them will have a story where there was a downturn in the market. Their competitors fell out because they didn't have the capital that these people did, and they were able then to grow their business during that. Yep. And so they're all, every last one of them thread the needle between being risk tolerant, because obviously to be an entrepreneur, you have to be risk tolerant, but risk averse enough to have the capital to make it through the downtimes. If you look at their portfolios, they are very moderate in the risk.
And very conservative in their spending habits too.
Very conservative in their spending habits. Not a one of them look like they have anywhere near as much money as they do.
You would not recognize them if they walked down the sidewalk, you know?
At all.
They're not going to be in Gucci shoes and that sort of thing.
No, not at all. They're interesting.
They will.
And that's what Tom's. I think it's Tom Stanley, but that's what he alludes to.
Yeah,
in his books.
They'll ski at Vail, but you won't see him skiing in Aspen.
Right.
So, if they ski, I mean, that's an analogy right. I would use.
Right. They're very good at developing relationships and maintaining relationships. You know, that's another that's another core competency that they have.
That's right.
And so, you know, we just have to sit there. They're extroverted. They're good. They almost all have long-term key people that that love them.
And that's why you like working with them.
Absolutely. And it's funny, we have had, they're good people. We have had some business owners that were truly assholes that are no longer our clients, you know?
Sure.
They're no longer our clients. At this point, the ones that we have had as clients for almost 20 years, 10 to 20 years, depending, you know, they're good people that we really like. So we really need to sit down and think about what makes them tick and really what they're looking for from a financial advisor.
Craig and Linda,
right.
It'd be good to come back for that too.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's for the next time that we speak, you know, I've taken some notes and, you know, we're going to stay on the theme of the four things that we've been talking about. We're going to shore up the value proposition to the business owners, the family businesses, and, you know, don't rush. Take your time as you form this external team, and then we've got to discuss the strategy on how we bring them together. How they find out about your business, your supernova process, your concierge practice, and how we're going to approach them to be a part of it. And the same approach is really how you would approach any real center of influence to begin with. So now what we do is we begin to take the idea and the concept, and then we put it into kind of action. And you've got your one page, you know, action plan, which is really, really good. So those would be just the two things that I would focus on, you know, because you've got a lot on your plate right now. So if we can focus on the value statement, value prop, and work on this external team and continue to fortify that, you don't need 50 people, just stay with the, you know, plug the gap on the CFO and I think and the CPA, and I think you're done.
Okay.
All right. And that's what we will talk about for the next time. Anything else on your mind? Anything else that you want to bring up?
No, because Audra's showing me some link to Marketing to Entrepreneurs.
So I found a book that Marketing for Entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Oh, no, that's for entrepreneurs. Oh, that's not what we need. Yeah, never mind.
I'm going to start with that Stanley stuff and just listen to what he says.
Yeah, just to kind of reinforce a little bit, I think it would be helpful.
Why don't we all three just look at it from our own unique perspectives and come back together?
I like that.
Come up with.
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll send you the one-pager that we put together, Curtis, that I referenced earlier in the call on the action plan. And where we are on the marketing. And then when Audra gets that marketing piece back from corporate on the family business segment, she'll send that your way and let you do that as well. Oh, and
now, I don't think I'm going to, I don't think I have you on the schedule between now and the end of the year, do I?
No.
Probably not, yeah. So, you know, our next call is going to be in January.
Sometime. But we'll send you that between now and then, and if that's okay.
Okay.
But we needed your physical address. I know you've given it to us before, but there's some stuff we were trying to get out to you, and for reason, not writing your address. I'm putting it in my notes and my contact.
Okay. So. Here, I'll just give it to you right now over the phone.
Okay.
Okay.
It's 3852 Inverness, Inverness Way, and that's Livermore, California, 94551.
94551?
551.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Curtis
Brown.
All
righty.
And what do you have planned for the holidays, Curtis?
Well, I'm torn between staying in the Bay Area and going down to San Diego and seeing a multitude of family members. And I need to be making up my mind in the next day in terms of I've got brothers and sisters down there, so they all, kind of want me to go down and visit them. My two sons are working, with the exception of Christmas Day. So on the front end and the back end, they're working. So, so I may just, I hate to kind of leave them, in the lurch, but I may go down and do that.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And, this is going to be a different Christmas.
Right.
On December 17th was my wife's birthday. It would have been her birthday. And so... So I wished her a happy birthday, and but I'm feeling good. I'm getting adjusted to the new normal and putting one foot in front of the other one.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've all been through a loss, so we know what that's like, and we slowly but surely, time and our devotions, we start to put the pieces together, and that's what I've been doing. So I'm in a good place right now.
That's great. That's great. Well, you've been in our thoughts.
I appreciate that. And I want you all to have a great holiday and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
And I know the San Antonio folks will be celebrating.
Yes.
Always. And forever.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Curtis.
Okay. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.